radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Time, but space is a place that only a human being locates. Where there's so much information to take, then you enter an entirely new place. Once you get off the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanley, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here on the Cyberspace Sanctuary, on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. We are a grandmother's prayer. We are a grandmother's dreaming. We are the breath of the ancestors. We are the spirit of God. And we are mothers of courage, fathers of time, daughters of death, sons of great vision. And keepers of faith, makers of peace, wisdom of the ages. We are our grandmother's prayers. We are our grandfather's dreaming. We are the breath of the ancestors. We are the spirit of thought. We're mothers of courage. And sons of great vision, we're sisters of mercy, brothers of love, we're lovers of life, and builders of nation, we're seekers of truth, and keepers of faith, we're makers of peace, and wisdom of ages. We are a grandmother's prayer that we are. Our grandfather's dreaming. We are the breath of the ancestors. We are the spirit of God. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe. And we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe. Who
you're listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton. We started our program with a message in the music from Sweet Honey in the Rock. We are. We are the prayers of our ancestors. We are the spirit of God, the creator, the omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient, the unseen, unfathomable one, pure energy, pure spirit, consciousness, intelligence. And we are the embodiment of this creator. We'll talk more along these lines with our special guest, Kitty Obi Owadu, who was recently ordained as a minister into the Sacred Order of the Sons of Ra, and many of us know him as an internet radio pioneer. He's a filmmaker, he's an author, he's an activist, and he is a Renaissance man in showing the way toward African transformation, self-actualization, and empowerment. So we look forward to our discussion and conversation with Kitty, and we'll do so following these messages. So please don't go anywhere. We have an extra special guest, and we've extended the program. We're going a little over, and just to accommodate him, because I really wanted to get out what he is doing now, particularly with his new ventures as a chef, a superfoods chef. And he'll talk about that, and I'm sure much, much more, right after these messages. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. We'd like to welcome everybody checking in from Real Media Player, from Windows Media Player, from iTunes. We want to encourage everyone to log into our website, which is blakeradio.com, and become familiar with how you can access our broadcast directly from our website. And vice versa, those of you who check in directly from the Blake Radio Network, become familiar with how you can also access us through Real Media Player, through Windows Media Player, and iTunes by logging into their radio tuner guides and doing a search for us in the talk radio genre. You're listening to Rainbow Soul, talk radio at its best.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Junius Ricardo Stanton here with some truly great news. The Blake Radio Network has officially released the new Rainbow Soul iPhone and Android apps worldwide. Now, there's also an HTML version for all other cell phones. The apps can be accessed from www.blakeradio.com on the Rainbow Soul page or directly from the iPhone App Store or Android Market. These apps will allow you to lock in exclusively to the Rainbow Soul broadcast with the touch of a button. These acquisitions complete the development and release of all the apps for the Blake Radio Network family of channels, which includes Rainbow Soul, the All Talk channel, and Music Massage, an eclectic mix of R&B, jazz, soul, and reggae slow jams for your listening edification and entertainment. So take full advantage of this opportunity for connectivity and mobility by downloading your respective app from your source. Continue listening to the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul and Music Massage.
Heart and soul, body and mind, but the very essence of our existence is spirit. What is it about the human spirit that produces the courage and the strength to beat insurmountable odds, to survive and endure despite unbelievable circumstances? Our spirit, embodies the very essence of our existence. We believe that it has been handed down from generation to generation, beginning in Africa, the motherland, where for eons, we believe that the Creator heard us when we cried, saw us when we faltered, and helped us along the way. And now, more than ever, it is time for us to get back in touch with the spirit that lives inside us all. Because without it, we are less than whole. But with it, there is nothing we cannot overcome. For the essence of our existence is spirit.
Our guest today is Kidi Obi Owadu, who is the founder of the Lib Radio Network. He's an author, and now he's embarked upon several new life-changing ventures. He's a chef, and he's also been recently ordained into the priesthood of the Sacred Order of the Sons of Ra Ministry. Welcome, brother. How are you today?
Greetings to you, my brother Junius. I am doing absolutely wonderful, energetic. My spirit feels strong. A lot of challenges going on in this world around us. And so if we can hold on to a proper, fitting attitude while remaining healthy and in great, healthy relationships with our fellows, then life is good. It's great to hear from you, Junius.
Well, it's good to hear from you. I think one of the things that energizes you is having a purpose. And you're constantly getting energy and reinventing your purpose, which is to be a communicator, to be a teacher, and a, I hate to use the term role model, but a demonstrator of what it means to be a self-actualized African person. So would you agree that those aspects of your life are what gives you added drive and incentive to get up in the morning?
You are absolutely right, Brother Junior. It's an excellent point that you make. I'm constantly studying what I am doing in order to improve the quality of our presentation. Plus, you know, we're approaching things on a very scientific level, which does require a constance of study and understanding. One of the books I've come across recently is called The Blue Zones, and it talks about the author analyzes four groups of people who are known to live the longest lives around the planet, cultures that promote longevity. And he identified nine particular areas of the people's lives that contributed to not only their longevity, but the fact that these people were lively and vital and energetic and self-sufficient well into their 90s and even beyond. And one of the nine things that was pointed out was a strong sense of a life purpose, life mission. So in your question, you put your finger right on what could, would, should be one of the key factors in all of our lives. Are we excited to wake up in the morning? What is the first thought that comes into our mind that motivates us to jump out of bed and go ahead and get at this world?
Well, in addition to that, I mean, you're always growing, and I think that's the key. I mean, all too often, I would say that we see our people, and if you had to categorize them and put a sign on them, you would put a sign on dead, waiting to be buried.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this whole notion of having a purpose and pursuing it is vitally important, not only just for longevity, but also for the quality of your life here and now.
So very important. In fact, in what you were saying reminded me of one archetype, which we find in many cultures around the world. It's become personified in the Western culture in the form of these zombie movies.
But if
we look at the zombie not just as a horror movie phenomena, but the zombie as a sort of an archetypical personality, we have the walking dead. They're spiritually dead, many of them mentally dead, and many of them, their hopes, their dreams have been killed. And so they're just moving through life. And what does the zombie do? Well, the zombie is attracted to those who do have energy, but the zombie comes at those who do have energy in order to feed off of their vital life force, their energy, in order that the zombie can survive just until the next day. So we want to move our people away from this type of walking dead environment. And among the many ways we can do it is just being in tune with the forces of nature, the sun, the great giver of energy, the earth, the great receiver of energy, and water, the great interface between the giver and the receiver, which brings forth life. And this can be applied on a physical, spiritual, and mental basis.
Now, you just mentioned the importance of a spiritual grounding and how important that is. And you being a researcher, you're always on the path. So I got a notification that you were recently ordained into the priesthood of the Sons of Ra ministry, the Sacred Order of the Sons of Ra ministry. So what led you in that direction?
Wonderful question. And it's really been a lifelong journey. I've examining my life back as I see these fragments have coming together to lead me to this. I think I was really born to this particular mission and this pathway. But insofar as most recent, I have been doing, I've been a member, an associate member of the Sacred Order of the Sons of Ra for a number of years and building and growing together with the group. A number of our friends and associates were ordained as ministers of this organization. And then a couple of months ago, because I've been working much more closer with the founder of the organization, Brother Heru, Calvin Kennedy, I was given the invitation to become a priest. And immediately I said, absolutely, yes. But how does it fit? Well, my ministry has really been primary centered around three particular things. One is the restoration of the great mother goddess, the whole concept of the divine spiritual energy that many of us know as a he god has been out of balance for 2,000 years or ever since the Romans really kind of reset time at the Council of Nicaea, etc. So that's been one of my primary life missions throughout my life. Now I realize it was something much, much greater. The second mission being the divinity of nature. Many of us have lost touch with the fact that nature is divine, a divine energy, a spiritual, powerful energy. And if we don't function within this divine energy's embrace, then we're going to be suffering as a consequence. And then the third part about it, because of much of my research on health, is the concept or the construct of the body temple, that my spirit is being housed during this life journey in a body. Well, I want people to understand that this is a body temple. And so we've got to regard it, elevate it, and raise it as a temple so that the spirit dwelling therein can rise to its full potential.
Now, help us understand this, because a lot of, you know, you're dealing with conscious people. We're sharing some of similar audiences, but there are people who will hear this who are not familiar with the whole concept of a mother goddess. And those who have been brainwashed into Western theology and religion, that is heresy and anathema. Whereas most sane people understand that there is a masculine and feminine element. So elaborate on what you mean by the restoration of the mother goddess.
Yeah, well, I like the way you put that, that most sane people realize that having a father without a mother is out of balance. It's not even logical. And for all life to proliferate on this planet, there is almost always a coming together of two seemingly opposite forces that merge together, creating a union, which then generates a third one, which then seeks out its seeming opposite in the next generation to perpetuate life. And because much of what you and I have studied has led us to the Nile Valley and to this ancient civilization or set of civilizations that's been known as Tamari, as Kush, as Nubia, as Kemet, and as ancient Egypt, or, you know, remnants of which still resonate in modern Egypt and dispersed around the world, we understand that there was a high civilization that was created there that lasted for thousands, perhaps tens of thousands of years, according to many identifiable artifacts that take us back to 50,000 years of understanding there in the Nile Valley. And for most of that understanding of the high civilization that accomplished so many incredible feats of science and human discovery, through most of that, they had the concept of this balance between masculine and feminine, this balance and this dance between good and bad, or Set and Heru, the forces of opposition and progress. And so we've come to that understanding and applying this model to the world in which we operate today. And I have come to discover that in my own life, a conscious awareness and moving within divine energy, divine presence in my life, and I think most people would agree, the notion and awareness of a divine presence in your life makes life much more present. But incorporating a balance between the great masculine divine energy, whom many of us know as God, a generic name made into a formal name, or in ancient Kemet, we would refer to that as Ra, the masculine energy represented as a symbol of the sun. But also realizing that for the sun to give this energy, for the creator to give this energy, it must be received. And it is received in this great body called Earth, upon which we absolutely are dependent upon living. And so the Earth force is represented in so many ways in the ancients. Well, we come to recognize much of this Earth force in the form of Oset, the complement to Osar, divine children of the utterance of Ptah, the original creator, self-created creator, which had no gender. And so therefore, by moving into a greater awareness of this fundamental understanding, we gain the other half of our power back. And two halves joined together is much more than just the mass of the two halves. It is a wholeness now, and so it's an even greater mass. The other part about this, Brother Junius, is as we look through ancient cultures around the world and examine them from an anthropological point of view, the idea of a great mother goddess was actually widely dispersed around the planet. And I still contend that it was a hostile act on the part of a Roman Empire itself, founded upon the notion of a divine mother goddess, the foundation with Romulus and Remus. That story actually leads us forward again to that foundation of the great mother goddess. But it was the patriarchal uprising and overthrow that took place around the Council of Nicaea, 325 or so in the Common Era. This overthrow of a dominant spiritual system and then exporting that spiritual system around the planet, that was the burying of the concept of the great mother goddess. In order to survive, she has to be resurrected.
Now, what does the goddess represent? Because again, most of our people, even the ones that we associate with on a regular basis, many of whom are not conscious, mm-hmm. believe in an anthropomorphic and an anthropopathic white man up in the sky that's calling all the shots. And so to me, what you're saying is the ultimate liberating force, because it gets us away from that. But how do we replace that stultifying and oppressive notion of God as a white man and who has sent his white son to save us from shame, guilt, and degradation, to what you're saying, which basically was the paradigm pervading and prevailing paradigm for most of human history? So
yeah.
But share what it means, you know, on a practical day-to-day basis in terms of liberation and the restoration of balance, because balance, again, is the quintessential element in African thought.
Yeah, you ask great questions. Many times the roots and the seeds of the resolution to this are in the questions. That's why I enjoy our conversations, Brother Junius. You know, this idea of a great white God in the sky, all omnipotent, all powerful, and that has given us this gift of his son, Jesus, who was sacrificed for all of our sins. You know, the thing about it, Junius, as I've come to be raised in my own understanding and acceptance of all that is, because living in this world, we have to accept all that is to even master this environment. You know, I have no problem with people understanding and believing that. Because if that is the foundation that they have, fine. That's a fine enough foundation. We still have to build you a bigger house. And so, therefore, we can add to that. But to understand the certain things I have to understand that, and I'm not going to be basing too much of my conversation on that notion, because that notion itself has been greatly reduced. We can see that notion of the divinity and how it's manifest, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. These are the same people who give you the Ten Commandments. Well, you and I know through our research, and it's just historical research, that the Ten Commandments is a mere fragmentary extraction from the 42 positive affirmations of Ma'at. It's also known as the 42 negative confessions, but that's a different way of looking at the same thing.
Yeah.
And that in itself, there are other constructs from the very same people who had dwelt in that of 72 immutable laws to pass through to the world of the eternity. So we can understand that a people who would only give us a fragment of what has already been acknowledged and designated and codified as something much greater, then those are people that we're going to have to trust them only to a point and look for that which was missing from what they were able to teach. And so if I could give just a couple of examples of how we would engage and imagine the notion of this great mother goddess, I'll just give two examples. What would life be for anyone who did not know their mother? Now, I grew up in a single-parent household, like many people are doing nowadays, but in my condition, in my situation, it was a father raising four sons as a single parent, and then after my mother made her early transition, her father, who raised her as a single parent, moved in with us. And so we have all six males growing up together, with the father being both father and nurturer. In this case, my grandfather really brought a good divine nurturing spirit into the house, for which I'm eternally grateful. He was that sensitive a man, while still maintaining 100% of his manhood. So what would a child be like if they never knew their mother, if they never suckled at their mother's breast, if they never were nurtured, if they're never in their lifetime when they had a hurt or a disappointment or something that had to be caressed by that feminine energy, that child is going to be living, going through life out of balance and searching, searching, searching for something to give them a sense of balance. Another example is, what would we be like if our mother stopped loving us? And I'm talking about Mother Earth. What if Mother Earth only delivered tornadoes, only delivered droughts, only delivered horrifying blizzards, or only delivered heat waves that burned up all of the crops? Living without Mother Earth's love for just maybe a few seasons in a row can cause death and suffering on massive scale. We've seen these huge famines that have taken place in places like Russia and Bangladesh and Ethiopia and Zambia. And you notice I mentioned other non-African countries first when we're talking about famine, because the world only wants to put the face of famine and that disaster on Africa, but Russians have known famine, Bangladeshis and Indians have known famine, and we can appreciate the suffering of all peoples around the planet, and it's not just put on us. So to have these and other symbols of where this mother's love is to be found is now that people are going to understand that if we are going through life without, quote-unquote, God's love, we know it's a disaster. Well, I'm saying to everybody, you've been living this disaster because you have been going through life without acknowledgement of the great mother goddess's love.
Now that gets to the point most what I call first world people, aboriginal, indigenous people, particularly of African ascent.
And all around the girdle of the earth, which is the equator,
the
girdle of the earth, that's a very important concept.
All of those people, all of our relatives, understood that everything was alive and living. And so are you not reiterating that the earth is alive? Because that is something that's alien to the Indo-European, the Eurasian, the European, whoever you want to call them. They just, in their modern era, say, like you said, Roman Empire on, have just totally ignored that or tried to squash that.
You've made an excellent point. You reminded me immediately of the work from Shikant Diop And again, one of the most brilliant scientists. I consider him to be one of the three most brilliant scientists of the 20th century, along with Albert Einstein, very brilliant, along with George Washington Carver, very brilliant. And so you remind me of Shikanta Diop's proposal of the two cradle theory of civilization. And this equatorial girdle that I mentioned, where the sun is shining all day, all year long. There is no intense period of deprivation and cold where the plants and the fruits and nuts and berries aren't accessible. It's a very generous area, and the civilizations around the girdle of the earth that grew up in that area, they produce people with a profound sense of nature as a divine force in their lives, a sense of understanding that as long as we work with nature and caress nature, she will always be there to give us all of the sustenance we need. They were generous people. They were giving, loving people. And they also favored having large families. They loved being around children, the idea of being around children. Compare that to a part of the planet where for 4 months or more of the year, they're deprived of the sun directly strong enough to be able to keep the plants, the flowers, the trees in bloom, that they would have to eat up many of the other animals in that other part just to get them through the winter, take their skins off and wrap them around them, or live in the homes with their animals, sometimes even using the warmth of an animal as warmth to keep them from freezing to death at night. That's very, very real. And that's not just an insulting dialogue that some people want to put out there. So it created two distinctively different cultural types, civilization types. The thing about the Romans is that being a Mediterranean people, they are a bridge between these two opposing cultures. So we can see at the founding of Rome, we can see that this presence from the Nile Valley that dispersed itself out through the Mediterranean island states. It dispersed itself through the Fertile Crescent, today known as Palestine, Israel, Syria, Lebanon, etc. It dispersed itself all up as far as the Black Sea. We saw during the conquest of Thutmose III, they extended the African Empire and the Middle Kingdom to the longest position. I think that was a new kingdom. I could be corrected there. It extended it to the furthest that it had been extended. And so we can now understand that this conflict between the ice culture and the sun culture came into conflict, and eventually the ice culture was able to overwhelm the sun culture, and we've been living in that dismal reality now on and off for a period of 3,000 years and dominated pretty much by it for about 2,000 years. But the sun still shines. The sun still shines. We are children of the sun, obvious by our highly melanated epidural layer, which is designed to capture more of that intense ultraviolet radiation from the sun and convert it to an energy that moves through our spirit being, our body temple. This is true for all of the people living in the indigenous or earth girdle parts of the planet. They all highly melanated, and they all lived in great symbiosis with the sun and with the life forces of the earth. So I, in my priestcraft, Brother Junius, I have been anointed a priest of the sacred order of the sons of Ra, daughters of Ra. So we acknowledge that we are children of the sun, that we have a very special spiritual relationship because of such.
Now, as a follow-up to that, as an outgrowth of that, that touches on your second point, the divinity of nature. And like I said, most people in that girdle, in that belt, believe that the energy, this what I call the energy that has consciousness, intelligence, power, is imbued in all things. So we'll elaborate on that, and then I want to talk to you about your personal ordinational experience and your name and things like that. But address the whole notion of the creator embodying itself in everything.
Mm-hmm. We have these myths, fables, and allegories throughout the world's religions that give us an understanding of how civilizations understood and attempted to explain the phenomena of life in a way that could be transmitted easily from generation to generation. And one of the myths, fables, and allegories that we have is the quote-unquote Garden of Eden. Now, in the Garden of Eden, primordial man and primordial woman, symbolized by Adam and Eve, were there in a wonderful relationship with each other, and God was in their life with them, again, symbolized by the sun. So the sun shone down over the Garden of Eden, and in the Garden of Eden was everything that they needed for whole, complete sustenance of their body temple wherein their spirit could dwell. This is a wonderful myth, fable, and or allegory, but in this case it would be a myth, that we could use to help us understand our contemporary situation. The sun still shines, but we're dominated by a paternalism symbolized by ruling oligarch, symbolized by these dominant corporations, symbolized by this Orwellian presence in many of our lives of a mass media propaganda machine constantly convincing as many of us who would believe it that we are not happy. We'll only be happy if we consume a certain way, if we think a certain way, if we vote a certain way, if we fight a certain way. And all of that, as you know, Brother Junius, is just the great big lie. So amidst all of that, they would have us consuming beverages that pollute our body. They would have us functioning in ways that pollute the environment that we live in, that literally are destroying the very basis upon in villages or cities in which our children would be born and to grow, so that the children are sicker than their parents and their grandparents. So that all is unsustainable. To get back to sustainability or get forward to a sustainability, we're going to have to get ourselves back to the garden. This words, as I was doing the studies for my upcoming book and writing the chapter, we've got to get ourselves back to the garden. These words from this phenomenal song called Woodstock came right to my mind. It was originally written by Joni Mitchell. This is, we are stardust. We are golden. We are billion-year-old carbon. And we've gotten caught up in the devil's bargain, but we've got to get ourselves back to the garden. And so now we can see this movement is taking place, Brother Junior. Small groups within the United States and other countries, but especially around the planet, they're realizing that moving away from these rural agrarian societies into these big, huge metropolises, these mega cities, has been a human disaster. It's a catastrophe. It's so bad now, Brother Junius, that in certain places like metropolitan New York, Washington, D.C., Chicago, London, Paris, and Los Angeles, San Francisco, that the people have gotten to the point where they're not even burying enough children to survive more than just a few more generations. So we've got to get ourselves back to the garden.
Well, the approach that you've taken and more people are taking to reconnect to the one, the source, and I was looking at some information on the priesthood, on the sons of Ra, and they talk about the law of oneness. Explain that, because the West, as you know, dichotomizes, dissects, and distorts a lot of things. I mean, they had access to our learning, but they just could not grasp it, either because they couldn't process it, and then because of that what I call this Isfetian drive to usurp the natural order. But so explain it to our people what the law of oneness is.
The law of oneness is, it takes us back to the beginning. It takes us back to the source. We have people out here who say, I am one with God, but who refuse to accept that if I am one with God, then I am God, or I am this divine, omnipotent, creative force. The controllers, these manipulators, and these manipulators, they go back thousands of years. Manly Palmer Hall, in his wonderful book, The Mysteries of the Ages, I believe it's called, Manly Palmer Hall talked about the overthrow of the Egyptian or ancient Kemetan priestcraft by what he called a sacerdotal order, meaning a new initiate craft, arch sorcerers, who, having been taught the wisdom of the oneness and the power within the wisdom of the oneness, actually, because of their own nefarious intention, created an order of initiates that sought to overthrow the original priestcraft and to substitute another understanding of these ancient mysteries, these primitive, not primitive, but primitive mysteries, and substitute another. We can see that being perpetuated in groups such as the Freemasons, such as many of these Knights Templars, Knights Maltas, the Vatican itself, Zionism, etc. Many of them, and Zionism can be equated to Kabbalism,
right,
that's all
right,
based upon the oneness and based upon what they have come to call the Egyptian mysteries system, which you and I know as the primitive system of spiritual understanding, overstanding. So this concept of the one is available to everyone, but we're really going to have to clear a lot of clutter out of our not our cognitive mind, but our associative mind. We've learned concepts. We've had experiences many times through just consuming mass media that have embedded a whole series of concepts within our mind that are feeding ideas of individualism, of materialism, and of all kind of hostilities. Moving through life, Brother Junius, on a daily basis, considering virtually everyone we encounter as a rival, as a competitor, as a hostile force, that is the exact opposite of the concept of oneness. I'll just give you one more example here, just quick, close this thought out. On certain days, Brother Junius, as I'm driving through town, I'm driving through the street and I'm seeing people on the street. I look at one person, I say, oh, look, that person, they're homeless. Look how dirty they look. I look at another person, oh, look how overweight they look. Oh, look how depressed that person's look. Oh, look at the goofy hairstyle of that person. I have to stop myself at that point and I say, wait a minute. If there's something wrong with everybody, then there's something wrong with me. And it's not everybody, it's me. And so when I catch myself in that moment, then I say the only way to correct it is let me put my real, true eyes back on, and I'm going to look at these exact same people. And when I do that, I look at the person who might have seemed homeless, and I say that person has a resilient character. Despite all that has happened, the beating down, they still realize their life is worth living for. I look at the next person, I look for and I see and I bring out the right qualities in that person that inspires me to want to be like them in a certain way. Brother Junius, why else would we encounter people in this world except for to have our encounter with them improve our lives?
Right, right. And I maintain that the way it's structured, as a priest, you know that studying the ancient Kemetic creation stories, the creator creates to have experiences as a corporal physical being, because it is not. It is pure energy, pure consciousness, pure intelligence, pure spirit. And so what we are, actually, we're looking at ourselves, a part of ourselves. We're all connected. And that's the law of oneness. And I think the latter consciousness that you explain is the exact opposite of the consciousness of these psychopaths and sociopaths, and that's what they are. You know, Bobby Wright brilliantly talked about the psychopathic racial personality, and that's what we're faced with when we're dealing with our oppressors and the ruling elites that you mentioned. So how has your search, your quest, your evolution benefited you personally and prepared you for your life mission?
And you know, it wasn't any one great breakthrough moment. It was always just an ongoing unfoldment, studying and learning and applying and studying some more and learning and applying. But among the many things that I've come to is, and this is one of the ancient tenets also of the seven cardinal virtues, was freedom from resentment.
And elaborate on that.
The one who oppresses is a teacher of sorts, can teach us many things. Now, we know that we are the spear carrier. We are Shaka Zulu manifest. And so, therefore, if there is a danger to life, then we must stand up and do what we can to alleviate the danger to life. And many times that requires us to neutralize the ones who are bringing the poison, who are bringing the suppression, etc. This is one of the reasons why so much of my mission has been to stand in stark contrast against the medical pharmaceutical drug complex. So if we're talking about within the doors of America, who is the biggest killer? The biggest killer is not, quote unquote, the white man. The biggest killer is this medical pharmaceutical drug complex. It's a much, much bigger entity than one man. It's really a Setian force that's taken a spirit that's manifests itself in this big, huge superstructure. So I'm fighting against that. And save being lives, saving many lives. Many of us are fighting against warfare, etc. These are very important things. We've also got to fight much better, much more effectively against war against nature and toxic pollution, overconsumption, over materialism. Myself have been guilty of that, and I've got to check myself, always wanting to buy. And I look around, I say, well, I've got three other copies of that that are just a little bit older, and I didn't even use those for what they were worth. Why do I need a new one? So what it has done is it's given us a wonderful perspective. Junius, I now have the ability to see everything brand new. It's almost like I've been given two new sets of eyes. One.
Yeah, you're starting to break up.
Well, we're hopeful.
Yeah, okay. You're breaking up a little bit. Can you hear me? Because you're breaking up. I can't hear you.
Skype to connect in. Now, hopefully we got you a better connection here, Brother Junius.
Yeah, we're back.
Okay. Now, so just to summarize what I was saying is that in my own life, I've been giving these new sets of eyes. One, to be able to see the internal spirituality of the people that I encounter, almost as if I can see their aura in much more clarity, as well as to see the greater picture, which sometimes when we look at something only at the surface, we truly, truly resent it. If we can see it beyond the surface, see it from the opposite point of view, see it from the point of view of those who oppose us, sometimes we come to a much greater understanding.
The other thing, too, is that we know that for every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. So once you factor that into what we're experiencing, you get a different perspective on it.
So very true. We have been taught, as we've been dumbed down by this control-based society, we have been taught to be one-dimensional in our perspectives. That's not true sight. What if you can only see one color? What if you can only smell one smell? What if you can only taste one taste? The more that our cognitive abilities are limited, the less that we are able to enjoy the fullness of our I am manifestation. And so this is why, for so many reasons, we're going to have to do a better job of encouraging people to disconnect from this electronic matrix that's taking over people's real lives. Through the electronic information systems, this electronic matrix, people know more and care more about celebrity basketball players than they do about the elderly people living on their own block.
Yeah, and they had to show you the disconnectedness. They talk about friends, but they're not engaged on any level other than through these mediums. And I was talking to a psychologist, a brother, Afrocentric psychologist, and I related it to the science fiction projections where they're projecting in the future that what they want to see. And he was telling me that, and I was talking about the cyborgs, the machines, where the machines take over and the people are soulless entities and automatons. And he was saying, yeah, that's the projection. That's what where they want to take society, which is a total antithesis of the transformation that you are experiencing, that personal actualization and evolution on a spiritual and psychological and physical level that you are experiencing. So I just follow up on that. Share the difference between spirituality and religion from the equatorial cradle and girding and the girdle that you referred to versus the the religion of the ice people and the imperialistic use of it as a way of conquest by the Europeans.
Well, And I don't want to say anything that sounds absolute. I only want to say something about this that opens up the receiver of our ideas to more explanation, to want to know more. You know, sometimes, you know, and that's one of the control-based teachings, is to see everything as absolute. It's all either black or it's all either white. Where in actuality, those who have the greatest sensory perceptions realize it's all shades of gray, and they can move from these different polarities. But when we talk about this idea of spirituality, I'll just give just an analogy. Spirituality to me is my ability to wake up when the sun rises, and that's part of that is physical. We have the pineal gland, which controls our body's idea of a circadian rhythm. So if we truly, truly do respect our pineal gland, then we're going to have to realize that the sunrise is a gift to the entire planet. You don't believe me? Listen to the sunrise when, listen when the sun is rising. Listen to the birds singing. The birds are at their happiest part during the whole day, celebrating, and all of us should know that. So just to give an example of spirituality, at sunrise, I wake up and I can walk outside and feel the earth underneath my bare feet. Yes, I'm standing on grass. I'm standing on clover. I'm standing on the soil with my bare feet. I have flowers around me with these beautiful bees dancing in the early morning, glistening air. And so the honeybees almost look like they have a little electric glow around them. Now, I actually see this for real, Brother Junius. I have this garden behind my house, and this is one of the things that I see that helps to keep me tuned in to the idea of spirituality. I don't need a preacher. I don't need a textbook. All I need is the sun. All I need is the wet, moist air. All I need is to be surrounded by other life forces. They could be flowers. They could be grass. They could be trees. They could be honeybees, ladybugs. They can even be some pests that I don't necessarily get along with. They're still a part of this matrix of life. That is an analogy to what I describe as spirituality. Compare that to religion. Maybe the worst example that I could use for comparison, which actually has its moments in which people feel real peaceful and unified, would be the Catholic Church. This hierarchy dominated by a pope, a false representative of the oneness of God, God's man here on earth. The pope who sanctions dividing the planet up into heathens and those who are like us, and that they can enslave, brutalize, torture, murder, rape, and create all kind of horrendous crimes against these people. Why? Because they have not accepted the Lord Jesus Christ as their Savior. The same Roman-based papal governance that for centuries decided that if you even spoke in public about the notion of a great mother goddess, that was a heresy, punishment, not just by death. Punishment by the most horrible tortures ever designed on this planet. We saw all those devices that mm-hmm. were brought mm-hmm. up during that period. Those were used by these people under the guise of religion. They burned women who had the ability to do what George Washington Carver did. They burned women who could go out into nature, take their shoes off or take off all their clothes and dance with the bees among the flowers and the trees and see that life is about spirituality. Religion burned those people. George Washington Carver did the same thing and gave us one of the three greatest geniuses of the 20th century. People, it's time to liberate this genius again from the constrictions of religion gone amok, gone crazy. And let's get back to the garden. And let's maybe, Brother Junius, we may have to learn to dance naked in the flowers with the bees again.
Well, that's what our ancient ancestors did. So, you know, there is a method to their seeming madness when you look at it from a ice person's perspective.
And you know, Brother Junior, since you mentioned that, we can even see it today. You know, I love National Geographic films. And when I was a child, when we'd get a copy of National Geographic magazine at that time, we'd open it up and they'd be showcasing some of the still existent indigenous cultures from around the equatorial girdle. And as a young child growing up in this degenerate society, we would see pictures of women who were bare-breasted, mm-hmm. or sometimes you'd mm-hmm. see whole cultures in which almost everybody in the society could walk around naked. And we would think that somehow that there was something wrong with them, as we would have our nasty little fantasies. Now, knowing what I know now, I was looking at pictures of people who knew much more about freedom than I did at the time.
Yeah. And who were freer, meaning they did not have the limitations, they did not have the phobias, they did not have the complexes that have been foisted upon us because of the people that you talk about in terms of the Northern Cradle. Share
you didn't have to fill out 1040 tax forms every year.
No. And the other thing about that whole Ma'at mindset and paradigm was reciprocity, which talked about mutual aid and cooperation versus the competition that you referred to earlier. And so there was no need to have a mortgage because people helped you build your house, even if it was a house of mud or straw or whatever. So you didn't have these pressures and these restrictions upon you that the so-called modern and advanced and progressive world has put upon us that is killing us, certainly physically, because we see that their economy is about to collapse, and most certainly spiritually.
We had this story from the New Testament about Jesus as a young man, very young man, going into the temple where the money lenders had set up. And these money lenders were purporting to be or posing themselves off as men of high spirituality. And we saw at that particular point, within that allegorical story, we saw this merge between the religious orders, which were in many ways the governing bodies of the people, and the usury or money lending. Well, we're seeing the same thing today. The merge between governance, money lending, and religiosity, religion.
Mm-hmm. And also political oppression.
If we want to appreciate the story of Jesus, we've got to be like Jesus. We're going to turn those tables over and call them up for what they are.
And also add the other element of imperialistic oppression, because the Romans allowed the Sadducees to operate the temple, and the money changers who were making a profit, they operated with the sanction and approval of the Roman governors who were there. So it was all a hand in hand, and I'm sure they got kickbacks from that. But it was all hand in hand. So don't forget the imperialistic oppression part of that, too.
That's right. And then to bring this back forward to your point about reciprocity, in the original order, when we lived in the garden, there was so much surplus. And the surplus was extracted from the earth, given to us as a gift, as the fruit of our labors. And there was joy in the labor, especially when you knew that the joy of your labor would be when you go back to the clan, to the village, to your group, and you would lay out the fruit of your labors, and everyone would come around, and they would sing your name and say, what a brave warrior you are, what a productive gatherer you are. And they would sing your praises, feeding your pride and your self-esteem and your sense of dignity and belonging to the large group. And then we would all feast. And so the next day that the young ones would say, well, I want that joy. I want to be praised like that. So they would go out and they would find something that the village could appreciate. And then colonial imperialism comes. And as we gain an understanding from Walter Rodney's phenomenal book, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, they then imposed a tax on everybody living within the village, a hut tax originally called. Well, the people, they realized if we didn't pay this hut tax, that the guy was going to torture us, kill us, or hurt our children. So they would give them a part of their yams, a part of their fruit. Oh, well, the others said, well, that's not enough, because they know they needed to cart something back to Europe. So then they demanded ivory. They demanded gold. They demanded gems. Nowadays, they're demanding coltan and tungsten and platinum and steal the gold, steal the gems, etc. So this imposition of this Setian or satanic or opposed to life force upon all of us, how can it best be countered? We got to go back and do what we did in the beginning. We're going to have to bring our labors back to earth, bring forward from the earth, and then generously carry that to our assembled village, however that a village has been configured. You and I can make that decision to show appreciation and to learn and to teach the children. This is what reciprocity truly does.
Right, right. And the other thing we want to point out is that they also imposed that cash crop where they totally disrupted the natural collectivism or productivity of the people and just focused on one thing. In addition to the mineral resources that they stole, they might just make everybody grow cocoa beans or grow yams or one form of crop, which totally undermined the land, the ecosystem, and the social organization that the people had established for thousands of years.
If people want an example, living example that they could study to confirm exactly what you have said, Brother Junius, two areas of study. One of what we would encourage our people to study, King Leopold's ghost, the study of King Leopold of Belgium and his reign over the Congo as his own private fiefdom. Some 30 million Africans maimed and tortured, hands cut off, lips cut off, tongues cut out, noses cut off, all for the sole reason King Leopold said you are not harvesting enough rubber. And another one also dealing with rubber was the imposition of Firestone Corporation on an entire West African country, Liberia, where many of our great ancestors in the immediate aftermath of the liberation, quote unquote, from enslavement, a number of them went home to Africa where they formed this state called Liberia. Unfortunately, it was a failed experiment because what they really brought with them was this demon of Western industrialization, and they became pawns and players in a game by which Firestone imposed itself on an entire set of indigenous peoples, nations, creating Liberia, and then creating a conflict which has still never truly resolved itself.
Right, it's still going on. The descendants of the repatriates, so-called African repatriates who came back westernized and thought they were better than the indigenous people that were there and thus became pawns and tools for Firestone and the U.S. government.
Yeah, you're so right, Brother Junius. All of these are great, great areas for us to study, for us to learn. We should be studying these areas. We should be learning. We should be teaching our children because our children can make a better way for all of this.
Ashe, now you went through an ordination process and you've taken a priestly name of Kepra Ra. Explain to our listeners why that is so significant for you personally, but also for the organization and the overall community.
Well, the ordination really was just kind of a capstone and acknowledgement, a certification of what I've already been doing for many, many years. And those who gave me the priesthood and approved the priesthood acknowledged that. They said, we have the fruit of the brother's labors. It's very evident what the brother's been doing and undeniable that his work and his new work being proposed is absolutely a complement to the sacred order of the Sons of Ra. So I took on the name of as priesthood of Kepra Ra. Kepra Ra is one of the manifestations of Ra, the sun as a sense of divine life-giving energy. Kepra Ra is the rising sun, so therefore becomes a symbol of renewal, rebirth, of transformation, the promise of a brand new day wherein we can do our work and go to bed during the evening. With an idea that today was a great day of accomplishment and that Kepra Ra would be there to receive us in just a few hours, rejuvenated, refreshed. So this symbol of Kepra Ra is very, very important for me, and it allows me, therefore, to focus in a little bit more about what it is that I am to bring, to shepherd Ra through the sky, to welcome the people to the new day, to convince people once again to begin to rise at sunrise and greet the day at the proper time of the day so we can get back to living again.
And keeping with that, in addition to what you're doing in media, what you're doing on an international level with media, you're also doing traditional media and writing books and publishing books. So you have a new one in the works, Living Superfood Research, that coincides with your mission, but you've also taken on the challenge of becoming a chef. So elaborate on all of those things.
Yeah, it's amazing how these things all come together, as I see, as one unified ministry, as one unified mission, personal, human, transformative mission. To be able to be a journalist, as you know, one has to be a great student. One has to be a researcher constantly, learning, as well as being able to fit. How does all of this fit together? How is this connected to that? And what do I remember from my own life experiences that can give us an understanding, a greater understanding? So now with the chefing, this goes right into all three parts of my ministry, but especially the reestablishment and the reconstruction of the body temple. People have got to understand, and I'm constantly improving my language and my use of symbols in how I speak for the people to understand. They've got to understand that their body is a temple, that it is a sacred space, a holy space. And how can a temple function when it's cluttered up, when it's got toxic poisons in it? How can a temple function when it's so badly damaged by a number of influences that, you know, it's not reliable anymore? And so one of the ways that I've been able to do this is in studying about the different nutritional lifestyles, whether they be the junk food or the fast food or the standard American diet or modifications thereof or vegetarianism, vegan. I really wasn't much of a junk food or fast food eater, but I had my moments. But now I've arrived at a point where I can see forward. And so rising up beyond vegan even, I rose to being a raw foodist.
Oh,
I rose
okay.
to being a superfoodist and a fasting detox. And now we're studying the next level above that.
All right, now, explain that, because there are different gradations, and from what I've seen, the raw foods retain the most vital elements. So what's the practicality, and share some of the things, how we can use that, even if we haven't, like myself, I have not abandoned, and you know, we still eat fish and some poultry, but we have not totally migrated to a vegan diet, even though my wife and I were strict vegetarians 40 some years ago when we first got married. But share that, because various levels of transformation are required. And so give the position for getting into juicing and raw food, so people can make the decision whether or not that's the way they want to go.
If I'm going to simplify this in my first statement, as simple as I can put it, you're on a journey moving forward. You're on a pathway that has a fork, as life has many, many forks in the road. One pathway, a sign points to a culture of life. The other pathway, sign points to a culture of death. There are no small number of people who will consciously and deliberately choose to follow that pathway called a culture of death. The evidence for that is all around us. But there is inherent within us a natural desire to follow the culture of life and to disassociate ourselves with cultures based on death. And we find out that food is one of the ways when people make this decision many times a day. Do I go with the culture of life or do I go with the culture of death? Unconsciously doing it, but your body knows the difference. We have come to sample our food through five senses, or through three primary senses, sight, smell, and taste. Not being aware that the body, this machine called the body, senses maybe as many as 13 to 16 other ways of the quality of the food. What is the fat content? Is this food alive or is it dead? Is this food have liquid in it or is it completely dry? What's the salt content? The body has all these magnificent senses. What's the sugar content of the food that we're eating? So therefore, to truly allow the body as a mechanical vehicle, just as if it were a Mercedes or a computer, to allow this body to live its fullest potential, it must be accessible to the best or the greatest quantity of the best nutrient resources and the absolute smallest quantity of the worst nutritional sources. So therefore, we find as we begin to refine this, we understand that eating meat, most newspapers have finally caught up with where the research community, scientific research community, has been for many, many years. And, of course, much of these studies that are out here are financed by the very same people
right.
who are selling us poisons.
Right. Yeah, right.
But
right.
they acknowledge that eating meat leads to much higher rates of cardiovascular disease, heart attack, stroke. It leads to much higher rates of obesity and overweight, much higher rates of diabetes, hypertension, high blood pressure, cancer. And now there have been a new set of studies recently come out that talk about eating meat is associated with a much lower cognitive abilities. And otherwise, in other words, eat meat, be stupid. Mm-hmm. And they show this in tests using a series of cognitive tests on people who were strictly meat eaters and people who were vegetarians. And then when they reversed the meat eater's condition and they gave them strictly vegetarian or vegan diets for a short period of time, they had a distinctive rise in their cognitive performance testing. And so, therefore, eating meat makes one stupid. Eating meat also lowers our children's intelligence quotient by probably as much as 9 points or more. So as we come to study this, we even find the difference between being a vegan or vegetarian, eating cooked vegetables, versus eating those vegetables in their raw, uncooked state. Two primary areas come to our attention, even though I could probably point to a half a dozen or more. Two primary areas with the cooking of, say, we have some kale. Acknowledge this is a super green, a truly super food. If you cook the kale, depending on how you cook it, but in most cases, if you cook the kale the way you and I grew up with kale being cooked, it's being reduced down to about 20% of its nutrient capacity. Whereas if I go out into my organic garden eating organic kale picked right from the plant, washed off and consumed right on the spot, that's about 100%, real close to 100%, especially because the kale in my instance is grown in a rich black nutritional soil, which has all the nutrients possible. So therefore, do we deliberately consume 20% of our capacity, or do we attempt to strive for 100% of our capacity? Well, if we get to 100% kale, we find we can eat one-fifth as much and get the life, energy, minerals, and nutrients that we need from it. So therefore, we can lower our over-caloric intake, allowing us to live longer, live lighter, etc. The other part about raw food is digestive leukocytosis. If I cut myself, Brother Junius, my body immediately responds, and the white blood cell count in my body goes up by about 500 to 600%. That means I'm sick. I'm having an emergency response, and my body is going to want to shut down, make me want to go to sleep, depending on the degree of the illness. Most people don't realize that three times a day when you eat a cooked meal, you go through digestive leukocytosis. Your body has to rush all of these white blood cells to the scene of the accident because we've killed off the enzymes by cooking the food, not knowing that the living enzymes in the food were a necessary part of the digestive system as designed by nature, who did not design any microwave trees, any convection oven bushes, and who did not put a hot plate in the middle of our chest.
Okay. Now, there was a time when our people, I remember we get sick or something, and they called it pot liquor, where you drank the juices of the vegetables. Is that still valid, or have we overcooked and just destroyed most of the enzymes and nutrients to the point that even pot liquor is not valuable anymore?
Well, pot liquor is definitely going to be valuable, but that's also an idea that you understand that when you're cooking the vegetables like this, something's being washed out of them that you would prefer to have whole and complete inside of our bodies. It also destroys the vitamin C. And this is very, very critically necessary for us to get vitamin C as much as we possibly can. So, yes, grandmother was right. Give the pot liquor to the babies because it will have the water there. You can tell by the coloring of it, will have some degrees of chlorophyll in it as a chemical, not as an enzymatic, but as a chemical process. And we'll have some degrees of critical minerals in it also. So, yes, give that pot liquor. But better than that, now we know, give the whole green to the child, which will have all of it intact, undamaged by the heating and the cooking. The vitamin C will be intact, as well as the enzymes will be intact, and so therefore become so much more highly digestible. It's a miracle when we come to understand this, and this actually rejuvenates people. I tell people, imagine yourself at half your current age. Go back and analyze. How did your body perform? Was it quick? Was it overweight? Were you responsive? Did you have a feeling of invincibility? Well, if you can imagine that, I will show you a pathway through living superfood that you can achieve that. Beginning in stages, from as little as 4 to 7 days, you can reverse that high blood pressure. In 30 days, reverse that diabetes and start to reduce the obesity by a pound or more a day. Eating without starvation. It's a miracle. It's amazing to me, Brother Junius, how many people reject it because they just don't believe in miracles.
Well, and the other thing is that we are in competition, we meaning serious life-affirming media, are in competition with the Setian paradigm of the usurping of the natural order. So they're promoting death, they're promoting degeneracy, they're promoting decadence, and they're promoting GMOs, and they're promoting the type of so-called food, what I call frankenfoods, and things like that that are destroying us, the very things that you talked about. So how can people get more information about what you're sharing for life-affirming lifestyles and food choices, nutrition, and spirituality?
I'll give you a three principle. Actually, I'll give out a phone number, too, because I love talking to people about their new food destiny. Kepper Ra, the rising sun, loves to greet people who just want to go out and look up at the sun, you know, at this rising. The sun is as eager to meet the people as the people are to meet the sun. So they can call me after our interview. They can call me at 323-902-2919. I'll repeat that, 323-902-2919. They can find me on Facebook as Chef Keidi, K-E-I-D-I. And also they can go to the website, Chef Keidi, K-E-I-D-I.com. And then for the book, they can go to livingsuperfood.com. And that's with no S, livingsuperfood.com. Let your food be your medicine. And medicine ain't never tasted like this before. And I tell you, Brother Junius, this past weekend, and again tonight, we've just opened up a new restaurant. I'm working with a four-time Grammy Award-winning artist, Edwin Birdsong. And we have a new restaurant he's opened up, downtown Los Angeles, Birdsong's Vegetaria. And we're having a great time. I have made a vow, Brother Junius, in this city, Los Angeles, which has some of the best raw food restaurants in the world in it, I have made the vow I want to be the best. In our first 3 days of opening, I think we're well on our course of being acknowledged eventually as being the best raw food chef in this city.
Well, congratulations. Good for you. And I applaud your path to righteousness, your path to awakening, your path to enlightenment. And it was fortuitous I saw the message, because on my Harambe program for the past month or so, I've been doing a series on spirituality. And just knowing you and just, okay, I have to have him to explain some of the things that I've thrown out, because you put it into practical life experiences. And that's what counts. That's the main thing. Theorizing and philosophy are great because we're great deep thinkers as African people, but you have to apply it, and that's what made our indigenous cultures so great, was the application.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so very true. There is a new vibe, a new transformative breeze that's blowing, that we can open our sails to catch it, but we've got to know where it's coming from and what we imagine what destination we want to go to that we can use that breeze. Meanwhile, there's an overwhelming gale force wind that's blowing us towards the rocks where our ship will be dashed and crushed and our hopes and our dreams crushed. We've got to understand, we've got to know the difference. One of the things that since I've become a priest, Brother Junius, I'm rising above this resentment ever more. And I'm starting to understand, I think I understood it before, but I'm really starting to incorporate it more, Martin Luther King's point about we got to learn to love our enemy. Because if my enemy is teaching me to be strong, to be alert, to be resolute, to be very determined and very basic about the values that I'm going to be living in my life, if my enemy is confirming all of that, that that's the only thing that's going to be protecting me from them, then I've got to be appreciative of that. And I really think that that was where this enlightened being, Brother Martin King, where he was leading us. And eventually the enemies of Martin Luther King did take his life. He knew that in advance. He had risen so much that he knew that in advance. But we have to understand it was those betrayers, those perpetrators, those Judases within Dr. King's own circle mm-hmm. that allowed the enemies of Dr. King to take his life. And still, as he became a martyr, he became even greater in, quote unquote, death than in life. So I'm going to say to all of our people the word of caution. And Brother Junius, not everybody wants to hear this from me, but I have to say it because I know it to be true. Within these realms of black nationalism and pan-Africanism that you and I have been living and working for many, many years, Brother Junius, there are a lot of betrayers, a lot of deceivers. That's what's been holding our movement back. We take two steps forward and forced to take two steps backwards or three steps backwards. So we're going to have to do a better job of holding to a core set of values and say those who operate outside of these values have got to be brought back to these core values, or we've got to push them out and protect the children from them.
Well, I just want to comment on what you're saying and bring it back to Nile Valley understanding or overstanding. Remember the drama with Assar, Aset, and Set and Heru? The object, now there are many versions of the story, but at the end, there's always reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what you were talking about, the love that Martin Luther King was talking about, the reconciliation, because we cannot kill off all our enemies
that's true.
Without sinking to that depravity that they have projected on the world.
Yes.
And so we have to take the higher route, and while it seems to be passive and it seems to be non-proactive, it is in reality the only way to go. And by sure. reconciling ourselves to our divinity, then we can see what you're seeing. We can see the divinity in all things. And it is difficult because we've been taught their law, you know, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, life for life,
mm-hmm.
whereas the African way is reconciliation and restoration of harmony, balance, you know, the whole Maatian paradigm. Mm-hmm. So you're right on target with it, and I know from listening that you will carry this message, you know, through your radio station. So give us a little bit about information about the station, because you're one of the preeminent internet radio stations. You've weathered the storm. It's been difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You, Neil, Delaney, Brother Jamal have had staying power, and it has been very yeah. difficult. We've seen some great stations come and go.
Well, and I've got bad news.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah. The bad news is that we're going to go ahead and pull this one for the foreseeable future and reconfigure at a future time with something a little bit different and, you know, kind of turn this. You've mentioned Brother Neil. He was really the pioneer in this. We followed Brother Neil, Delaney, and Brother Jamal, and so many others have come. And now with Blog Talk Radio, it's open to pretty much anybody with a telephone now can say, I have my own radio. I'm going to go ahead and move on to another phase. You had mentioned about battling these sentient forces, and you gave this powerful allegorical fable of Asura, Set, Heru, and Set. We have to realize who was it that pulled together the disfigured body of Asura? It was Aset, the great mother god. So right now we can see this great body of Asura, represented in the global African family, is being crushed in many ways. Now is the time for us not to act in Setian way in attempting to rescue ourselves from this. Now is the time to remember this fable of Aset and how she provided the key factor to bring Asura back to wholeness, after which Heru, the son of the divine union, could then come into being the hero of generations to follow. Such an important story there. It's time right now that we call upon the true divine feminine spirit. And I'm not talking about the modern day reformed woman who's been sucked into the corporate enslavement herself and losing so much of her fundamental nature that now she's having a difficult time even producing children or feeding her family.
Well, we're going to let you go. I need some clarification, because I saw the message you sent. You were shutting down the Ning platform. I didn't know you were. I'm assuming you're not shutting down the radio station.
Right now, I'm having a difficult time imagining getting the radio station through this next phase of austerity and structural adjustment that the United States is about to undergo. It's been really hard, and for the last 2 years, I've struggled on a month-to-month basis just to keep all of these things floating. And I do know that there is a period of at least 2 more years, and it could be as many as 9 more years, that we're going to be in this wallowing around in this cesspool of the byproduct of the usury industries destroying the labor-based economy. So it's going to be really hard. So right now, Brother Junius, I'm just having a really hard time imagining that we're going to be able to come up with the type of support to keep these going. So I know I'll be forced to move out of my offices here in just a couple of weeks, and I just don't imagine that I'm going to be setting it all back up the way. There'll be some other things they'll be doing. I'm going to keep my core people who have been supporters. I've got a great database of people who have been supporters, and I know you have always been one of them. So I'm going to keep these people, and we're going to move into something else. It's going to be smaller, that we can have a little stronger defensive perimeters around it. I want it to be much more land-based, agrarian-based, and production-based than too much of what has held us together, Brother Junius, has only been hostility to external groups. I'm beyond that now, and I want to see if I can convince another group of people to move beyond that.
Well, let me know how I can be of assistance, but my immediate reaction is we need the information that you put out. We need the constant, the daily exposure to serious life-affirming people and who have the commitment. Not just in verbiage, but in terms of their life experiences and their life practices. And we can't afford to have that beacon go out. So if there's any way that you can manage your time, and I know it's very time consuming, and also integrate it with the new direction that you're on, new ministry and mission that you're on in terms of the foods, the gardening, all of that, please consider, even if you have to just cut back some of the broadcast day and just resort to replaying archived material, because we're up against psychopathy that makes Hitler and the Borgias and all of that tradition look pale in comparison to what their plans are. And I heard you the other day talking about birth control, and I heard you mention it somewhat yesterday on the Falcon Forum. And then when you add all the other things into it, our people need the information that you're putting out. You have no idea the benefit that having a lib radio brings to the communication to the community.
Thank you so much for your kind words. I do receive them with the qualified wisdom of which you are capable of bringing them. And we'll imagine life beyond depression, beyond recession, beyond austerity and structural adjustment. We'll imagine life when we're back in the garden again. And here's what I can promise you. We have this vision of these Kujichagulia villages, land-based reconstructed agrarian societies. And from the land of a Kujichagulia village, I promise you, Brother Junius, we're going to get a good satellite internet connection, and we're going to broadcast from there once again, liberated from the constant battle against these big metropolises that every year seem to suck a little bit more out of us than they're willing to get back.
Yeah. Okay, give us your contact information again, particularly about the book, because that's something I believe that your mission for promoting the gardens, the holistic organic garden, is spreading. Mm-hmm. More and more people are getting into that. So give us all that information as well as the book.
Yeah, the first of the three books is already out, LivingSuperFood.com. Again, Living Superfood, medicine had never tasted like this before. And the second book, I'm just getting down to the last couple of chapters, and I'm going to begin the editing process. And the second book, called Living Superfood Research, Understanding the Concept of Full Spectrum Hypernutrition, and really what this is about. Then the third book will be coming out next year, scheduled to be delivered, Living Superfood Remedies, for people who have a specific diagnosis, be it overweight, cardiovascular, diabetes, kidney failure. Here is the nutritional pattern that's going to best allow your body to rejuvenate and to heal itself. So that'll be coming out. So Chef Keidi, K-E-I-D-I, is how you reach me, 323-902-2919. For you, Brother Junius, and all the work that you've done for our family there at Harambe Radio and Delani's brilliant vision, I am just so grateful. And, you know, if LIB goes off the air for a year or two, I know that I can tell people, go to Harambe. You're going to get what you need. You're going to get your satisfaction. Go to Inner Light Radio. You're going to see your transformation there. And then fill in whatever gap has been left behind by those of us who came, have done our work, and then opened up that space for others to come in and do an even greater job.
All right, brother. I'm with you. I support you. And continue your growth, continue your actualization, and I commend you and congratulate you on this latest step in your development.
Ah, Shay, that's so beautiful. Thank you, Brother Junius. We send love to you and your family. Peace, prosperity. It's going to be a good year ahead. Wouldn't you agree?
Ashe, certainly will.
All right.
Diverse faith is the faith that no army with artillery invades. Where no military.
You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow.
That no corporation incorporates, no denomination faith dominates, and no court is going to try anything.